Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Lex Thomas welcomes Manish Werdeker to the show as they discuss the end of support for Windows XP and why you should make the move to Windows 7 or Windows 8 now. Tune in as they discuss the advantages of moving to a modern OS and the benefits of a flexible work style as they lay out the what, the why, and the how, and explain the pluses of modernizing your work environment. Lex, the mic is yours.
Hi, guys, and welcome to this episode of Taste of Premiere. We're going to talk about XP and end of life this time. I have Manish Werdeker, the Director of Infrastructure Services, with us today. Hi, Manish.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Lex?
I'm doing good, man. You're in Chicago, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I'm doing this podcast from a secret location deep inside Marshall Space Flight Center today. So what that really means is that I found an empty office and I've decided to set up shop.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So XP, man, it's been out for a long time. It's 12 years old, I think. We've extended the end of life on this product once, and we're getting to the point now where no, we can't extend it any longer. It's about to go out of support. We still have some customers that are using XP because it was a great OS, right? It just kind of works, and that's a good thing. That's what you want out of an OS. But there are some downsides to staying on XP, right? Support is ending, so if you do have an issue with the OS, you're not going to be able to get hot fixes, that's an issue. There are some security issues with running XP. It is an older security model, and there are some threats that XP is vulnerable to, and it will also be vulnerable to new threats as they come down the pike. But there are some other compelling reasons to migrate, right? So I guess that's going to be my first question to you. Why migrate?
Yeah, so There's sort of two approaches that I've been taking with customers. I've been doing having conversations with customers the past 3 years around XP migrations across the U.S., Canada, and Latin America. I've talked to well over 250 customers, ranging in size from a few thousand PCs all the way up to 500,000 or so. And there's sort of two approaches. There's sort of the stick approach, which is, well, yeah, XP is going into life, and it's not as secure and sort of the scary parts. And then there's sort of the more of the carrot approach, which is, well, what are some of the benefits of moving off of XP to a more modern OS? And I like to couch those in terms of this concept of implementing what we call a flexible work style. And I like to break those into sort of three sections. I call those sort of the what, the why, and the how. So in terms of the what, a very simple definition of the flexible work style is, the ability to access your applications and your data from multiple devices, from multiple locations. Today under XP, typically, in most organizations, if you are not in front of your corporate-provided device, your XP machine, you typically don't have access to your full suite of applications or data, sometimes none of it, or sometimes you have some partial access. But what we really want to do is make the device just another pane of glass where you can access apps and data from anywhere and across multiple different devices, and that's really one of the core foundations. Why would you want to do this? Well, guess what? There's actually some hard dollar cost savings if you implement the right management infrastructure and actually do the steps required to enable this flexible work style, modern work style of working. And for most customers of 20,000 PCs or more, that translates to sort of a hard dollar cost reduction of somewhere between $100 to $200 per device per year of ongoing cost reduction. This is not faster boot times or increased productivity. This is true cost takeout out of the environment. And there's a lot of details that go behind it, but basically it comes down to managing the existing infrastructure with fewer resources and also enabling more capabilities like the Any Device Anywhere. And in terms of, okay, well, how do you do this? On average, we can do this for most customers. We've done this for 4 to 5 million PCs across 600 plus customers in the last 3 or 4 years. So there is a proven cookbook, proven recipe on how to get from the XP environment today to this flexible work style. And on average, if you include most of the core components, the average price tag for that is somewhere between $150 to $250 per device. That's the services labor cost. That doesn't include the hardware refresh or software licensing, but just the labor to get from point A to point B. But if you do the math, you can see that with the TCO of $100 to $200 and the cost of $150 to $250, you're looking at about an 18 to 24 month payback on this investment. And it truly is an opportunity to not just replace Windows XP with just another version of our OS, but to really change the user experience and how users are able to access their apps and data. And that is the number one compelling reason to move off of XP, because you can't really do it well. You can't enable this any device, anywhere capability today on XP.
Wow. That's pretty good, and those numbers are pretty compelling. That's pretty cool. I haven't seen those numbers before. That's pretty compelling. What are some of the key roadblocks that you see? What are some of the worries that customers have? I'm on XP today. I need to get to Windows 7 or Windows 8. What are some of the things that you see as key concerns from customers?
So that's a complicated question or complicated answer. If we actually look at how do you approach what we call client deployment? There's a lot of different things that go into a client deployment scenario. And I'm just going to build out the slide here. And what you see basically is that it depends where your customer really is. So if they are in the sort of early stages of discovery and proof of concept, so there's a number of things that can be done. So I mentioned the TCO, the ROI. Well, we can help quantify that for a customer to say, what is my TCO ROI going to be? Do I even want to do this? There's also a number of different, what we call technical proofs of concept around, do I want to use, zero-touch deployment or AppV or a lot of the different technologies that we talk about. When it comes to just the pure migration, what we're really talking about is what's here in the green and then in the orange. The parts that are most critical where we see customers either succeed or run into challenges are in what we call the deployment solution, application compatibility, and then getting through to what we call a production pilot. So what this means is really, if you actually break this down into its component parts, the parts in the light blue here are the ones that are most critical, and where actually Microsoft, through our services arm, adds a lot of value in mitigating risk and making sure these programs are successful. Just finding applications. So XP, a lot of XP shops have a lot of different applications. Just discovering those and rationalizing down to a smaller subset. It's not a lot of effort. It's only about 5% of the overall effort, but it's something that customers find very, very difficult to do. And so that's an area where they're looking for some help, and that is a critical first step to even start a migration, is how many apps do you have and getting it down to a smaller list. The other two are deployment engineering, so how you're going to deploy the OS. So what you don't want to do is do it the same way you've always done it with XP, which in most shops is really sending out a lot of manual fingers and eyeballs basically to do this with manual labor. What you want to do is focus on automation and engineering that automation so that you're building sort of a repeatable process. And then when you want to actually go what's called deployment execution, you can just turn the crank on this really, really efficient automated way of deployment that you've built at a very low cost. Application compatibility testing, that is the bulk of the cost or effort, is taking all those apps you discovered and rationalized up here and then putting them through a compatibility testing process to make sure that they can run, or the ones, identifying the ones that can't run and then figuring out a way to mitigate that and not have those apps block your migration. And then this part here, the program management and governance, and if I actually go back to the previous slide here, the program management and governance parts of this really extend throughout the entire program. And this is a critical piece that a lot of customers overlook. So think of this as if you're building a house. This is sort of your general contractor role that's there, you know, throughout the construction of the house up to when you get your occupancy permit. You know, this is an area where, you know, there's a lot of handoffs with the business side. There's a lot of user training. There's a lot of, you know, prep work that goes into, you know, the operation and run part of this that customers sometimes fail to plan for. And if they put all these things together in a comprehensive program, you know, we can ensure a lot of a lot more success and a lot of higher probability of success. And then the last thing I'll throw out there is there is a limited time. As you mentioned, April of 2014 is the XP end of life date for support. After that, if you're still on XP, you really have two choices. You have to either purchase a custom support agreement, which is quite expensive, or you have to go unsupported, which we don't recommend, because then you mentioned the security issues. Well, not only are there security issues with XP today, but after April, if you don't have a custom support agreement, you are not going to get any new hot fixes or security patches. So our goal is to build a plan with the customer that gets them migrated before April. And one of the unique things that, you know, we can offer through Microsoft Services is that if the customer can come to a joint plan working with us where we can get deployed by April, and this is entirely possible because we, you know, we've been doing this a long, long time, we can get this really, really efficient, we can basically sign up for a guarantee to say, yep, we will do what we're going to do, you do what you're going to do, we'll get you migrated by April. And if for some reason we miss that date, and it's, you know, something that we fail to deliver on time, we can even offer some indemnification or coverage of custom support costs for the customer for up to 1 to 2 quarters. And, you know, that's about $500,000 to $1 million value for the customer in terms of an insurance policy that no one else out there today is able to offer.
Wow. So if you need help, we can help. And if you sign up for help with us and we can't get it done in time, we'll even help you with some extended support.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you tell me more about implementing the flexible work style stuff?
Sure. From the perspective of the user, right, so what we need to do is take a step back. A lot of times I talk to folks are in the IT department, and those are the folks that are responsible for implementing a migration. But we also need to look at this from the perspective of the end user. What do end users really care about? You know, they really don't care about Windows XP or Windows 7 or Windows 8 or even down to that device level, right? We see a proliferation of a lot of different form factors. People want to bring their own personal devices, you know, iPads and slates and Android devices and non-Windows devices. That's all secondary. First, users want access to applications and data. That's it. Once you give them that, then it starts to get into a little bit more of, okay, well, now we have this concept of what, from what device, from where, and through what access method. And these are the things that the IT department now has to figure out. Two key principles. Number one, first and foremost, what we would like to introduce is this concept of a persona. A persona is basically a collection of users that have similar set of applications or a similar set of data that they need to access. They have similar job roles, right? Sales or marketing or finance, etc. Each of these users or personas has a default device that they typically use and probably a location that they work from and an access method. Two key principles. On the persona side, right, depending on who you are, you need to build the intelligence into your infrastructure at this level that says, based on who you are allowed to do certain things based on your role and who you are in the organization. And on the application and data side, you need to start categorizing your apps and data into a few layers. Now, at Microsoft, we break those into sort of three layers. We call those high, medium, and low business impact. What does that mean? When I have an application or piece of data, if that falls into the wrong hands or if I can't get to it to do my job, what's the impact to the business? So, you know, as an example, if you look at, you know, Windows source code, Windows 8 source code, very high business impact from Microsoft, right? So to access that, you must be a member of the Windows product team. You must be on a corporate managed domain joined device. You must be in a specific building in Redmond over our internal secure network. And then you can get access to Windows 8 source code. Those same people, however, can access, say, HR benefits data. I want to look up, you know, what's my health benefit? That could be anybody at Microsoft from any device, from anywhere over the unencrypted internet, and that's perfectly okay. And so the intelligence of mapping those users to that data, that's step one in implementing what we call the flexible work style. The second key principle is, as I mentioned under XP today, if you have an XP device, typically, you know, the user data, the user's applications, their settings, the XP operating system and the hardware, all very tightly coupled together as one big monolithic sort of block. One of the key principles you want to start looking at in migrating off of XP is try to separate those. So have data and user settings delivered as a service through what we call user virtualization. Have applications delivered as a service through various technologies such as application virtualization or data-driven delivery. And then the OS and the hardware just becomes another layer that you can easily swap out. And here's the key. If you do these things correctly now, this really makes future upgrades require a fraction of the effort that you're having to go to now and moving from XP onwards. Now, you mentioned security, and for the, you know, for security and better manageability and to implement some of the capabilities in the new OS, when we went from XP to Vista, and when we went from IE6 to IE8, Internet Explorer browser, we had to implement some changes that broke some applications. And that's really the biggest pain that users are facing right now, is moving off of XP, moving off of IE6. They have to take that first leap. One of the product team goals has always been, if your application works on Vista, 98% of your apps will work on Windows 7, IE9, IE10, Windows 8, etc., on the same or lesser hardware, and that's the plan that we want to go to or stick with going forward. And if you implement this sort of separation of layers, you can actually only have to take that big leap once, and then future upgrades. You can really treat the OS upgrade in the future, this layer, swapping this out, sort of like a service pack upgrade. And I'll give you an example. So we've been working with the U.S. Air Force now since 2006. They have 500,000 PCs scattered across the world. We actually helped them move from Windows 2000 to XP, XP to Vista, which was, again, the major effort. When they went from XP to Vista, they were able to implement these principles. When they were ready to go from Vista to 7, they really just treated it as a service pack upgrade, and they were able to migrate at a rate of 40,000 to 50,000 machines per month. So they were 90% done with their 500,000 PC upgrade from Vista to 7 in 11 months back in 2011. Now, I would not recommend any customer do it at that rate, but the point is that the technology scales to be able to do it, and these principles, or implementing these, the separation is really what let the Air Force achieve those, that kind of capacity. So, again, don't just replace XP with another version of Windows. Really, really look at changing how you do this. And then the last piece of that is really moving from what we call a device-centric model to a user-centric model. So today, under Windows XP, you deploy applications and data to a device, and a device gets applications, and then the user experience falls out of that. What we want you to start thinking about where the industry is going is deploy applications and data, or manage it to a user. The user has applications that they're allowed to access, and then the device could be anything that accesses that set of applications and data based on who you are and where you are. Again, back to the concept of personas, and you know, the concept of device independence.
One of the things that I've noticed is that in your presentation, in this slide deck, you've talked a lot about different devices, right? And that's something that's pretty important. Most customers, when they think of ROSs, they think of, you know, a desktop device. But really, with the consumerization of IT, that's changed quite a bit. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this all affects the consumerization of IT?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a great point, because, you know, people look at consumerization of IT or enterprise consumerization, and they look at it simply from the one dimension, which, you know, we call that bring your own device. It's actually a lot more complicated. There's a lot more variations of consumerization than that. And if you actually look at it, there's actually four options. So the traditional model that we have in IT today in most organizations is what we call here's your own. So here's a device, or here's a list of six or seven devices, a couple of desktops, a couple of laptops, some tablets. You have to choose from that list, you know, a couple of Dells or HP or Lenovo or whoever your vendor is, and that's it. So now customers want to talk about, okay, bring your own device. But there's actually two variations, and let me explain. So, for example, at Microsoft, I can go buy a smartphone, at you know, Windows phone or whatever phone at AT&T or Verizon, and I want to get corporate email, right? So I can connect that device to my, link that device to my corporate email at Microsoft. The moment I do that, before I can start to get email on that device, on my phone, it's a phone that I own, the corporate IT department's going to try to push some policies down on that phone to say, well, yeah, if you want to access corporate email, well, what we're going to do is we're going to require you to put a four-digit PIN code in, and it's going to lock the phone after 15 minutes automatically, and you can't change that. And if somebody enters the wrong PIN five times, it's going to wipe the device. It's not just going to wipe the corporate email part. It's going to wipe the entire device, all of my personal information, data, contacts, etc. But I choose to do that, because for the convenience of getting corporate email on that device, I'm willing to put up with that. The variation of that where I'm not going to allow the you know, corporate IT department to do anything to the device, that's what's called on your own. So bring your own is where you own the device, you bring it to work, but corporate IT is going to push some level of control onto that device. On your own is where, well, we're not going to do that. And if we actually look at the four dimensions of this, it's about who owns the device, right? Does the consumer own it or does the enterprise own it? What's the control? So in a normal here's your own scenario, enterprise has full control. In the bring your own scenario, the example of my smartphone, we have medium control. And in the on your own scenario, there's zero or low control. Flexibility, again, there's more flexibility in the blue. And then there's no policies. But in this scenario where you're on your own, because I can't push policies to you, I'm going to limit what I'm going to let you do with that device. So you're trading off, you know, the span of control for what you can do or what the corporate IT department will allow you to do on that device, right? And then the last category, choose your own, that's becoming increasingly popular. Rather than us provide or IT providing you with a, you know, here's six devices, we give you a budget. Say, here's $1,000 or $1,500, you know, go to Best Buy or Amazon or whoever and go get your device. But it's got to have the following criteria. It must have a TPM chip because we want to be able to, you know, use BitLocker encryption. It must have a smart card reader because we want to use two-factor authentication, etc. Beyond that, you know, you can do whatever you want. And again, it kind of straddles the dimension between these four things. So again, it's a trade-off between reliability and sensitivity versus flexibility. And if you provide all four of these with the varying degrees of control and then build the intelligence and the infrastructure, so based not only just on the user, the persona, but also on the device and its capabilities, you can control what that device can access based on, you know, what the span of control is. That's truly enterprise consumerization or bring your own device. What this really comes down to is security and management. So we have System Center 2012. And there's Windows Intune that can manage, you know, your iOS, your Android, and, you know, your Windows other devices. Main thing here is you want to implement what's called a balance between governance and control. You know, governance is really letting the employee or the IT consumer know that there's rules, right? You shall not post confidential information on Facebook, and you sign that as part of your employee agreement. Control is actually preventing you from doing things, like putting that PIN on my phone or you know, requiring me to do something through an actual act that I can't undo. And so there's a balance between governance and control. The key is centralized management across this, you know, all these platforms. And then the last concept I'll talk about really is the fact that you want to pick the right solution for the right job. You know, too many times I go into customers and they've made a decision. We're going to go 100% thin client, you know, 20% VDI and 80% Citrix and all this other stuff. What they really should be doing is starting with the personas, the people. What does the user experience need to be between the flexibility of mobile versus, you know, work at home versus, you know, a cross between the two, and how simple or complex you want the infrastructure to be. And the reality is you're going to have a little bit of everything. You're going to have some VDI that's appropriate for some percentage, maybe some rich traditional desktop, maybe some, you know, other types of solutions, and then your slates or tablets, as well as your traditional laptops and desktops. So do what's called an outside-in design. Start with the user and design the least complex infrastructure required to meet the requirements of the personas. Don't start with what we call inside-out design, which is start in the IT world, decide I'm going to do the following, you know, VDI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then the user experience is kind of held hostage to that infrastructure you've predetermined. That's kind of a backwards way to do it. And then the last piece, you know, on Windows 8, Windows 8 actually opens up some exciting things that were not possible before. The two biggest things that I like to focus on is this concept of Windows to go, your portable workspace. So if you take that on your own or bring your own scenario even further, you know, some corporations are considering providing users with a Windows to go stick. What that is really a version of your corporate operating system with all the applications on a USB drive. You can plug that USB drive into any machine, a kiosk at, you know, an internet cafe, your home machine. It's encrypted. You boot off that USB key. All your local hard drives and that machine that you plugged it into can be locked out. And so any machine becomes your corporate machine. You don't have to carry it around. And there's a lower cost of management or overhead for the organization. That is a key feature that's only available with Windows 8. And then the second part of that is there's much, much better virtualization or user state virtualization capabilities in Windows 8. You know, so for example, at Microsoft, I've got a number of different devices. I've got my Surface tablet. I've got a number of Windows 8 PCs running. All of my experience is synchronized across that. I just got a brand new laptop the other day. You know, I put in my corporate credentials, I tied it to my Microsoft account, and all of my settings, my background, my wallpaper, my applications and data, my data was up on SkyDrive. When I brought that machine home, it even remembered the Wi-Fi password to my home Wi-Fi network, and I was just able to start it up and connect. I didn't have to do anything. So that experience of that any device, anywhere, and the personalization is much more robust in Windows 8, and the capabilities are very rich there. And then from a user experience perspective, it's fantastic.
Yeah, don't you love that? I love Windows to Go. I've been using Windows to Go since early on in the in the beta cycle for Windows 8, and I actually did a Taste of Premiere episode a while back on Windows to Go that just that aired, I think, what, probably 6 months or a year ago now. We can throw the link up to the Windows to Go show if this is something that you haven't heard of before, because there was a show that we did on Windows to Go that I had a lot of fun doing. I personally just love Windows to Go. I think it's the coolest thing in the world, and you're absolutely right. You know, your corporate IT image can be installed on a USB stick. Then you don't really have to worry about the device that you're running it on. You don't have to worry about, you know, the corporation taking over your personal device, because it's all just right there on the USB stick. So that makes things so much easier. I love that technology.
Yeah, it's something customers have been asking for quite a while. And in the Windows XP and 7 days, there were a number of third-party solutions that attempted to provide that functionality, and it wasn't always what it was advertised to be. But now with Windows 8, it actually works as advertised, and it's a pretty neat experience for a lot of our, and it's the right solution for a lot of enterprises.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. This has been an awesome presentation. I really appreciate you doing it. If somebody wants more information about this or needs to contact us, is there a special place they can go? Is there an email address they can email?
Sure. So for accounts that have a dedicated Microsoft account team, you know, please just contact your account team. You should have an account manager or a services executive focused on the services portion. For those of you that don't know who that is or don't have one, you can send an email to servicesexcellence, that's one word, servicesexcellence@microsoft.com, and it'll get routed to the right folks, and someone will be in touch with you.
Awesome. And again, if you guys have any questions in general, or you lose that email address and you don't feel like watching the podcast again, just email me, Taste of Premiere, right? topp@microsoft.com. I want to thank you guys for joining, and I certainly want to thank Manish for doing the presentation for us. wow, it's really been an eye-opener, and so thanks again for doing that for us.
Thanks for the opportunity. My pleasure.
Yep. Guys, this is your taste of Premiere.